Yes.
Okay, you'll be on mute while we do the intro.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome. It's Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
How are you?
I'm sad.
No.
I'm sad today.
Big announcement.
Yes. Should you announce it?
I don't know.
Should we not announce it and just pretend it doesn't happen?
Yes, well, this is going to officially be our last show. At least for now.
Exactly. I was just going to say.
We've had 4 years. It's been an excellent run.
It really has.
It's been so much fun.
I had the best time. I really did.
So amazing.
Beyond my expectations, too. Like,
oh,
I really,
me too.
You know what I mean? I thought we'd go for like 6 months. Like, I remember having the 6 month conversation with you
right.
of like, hey, what should
we'll
we
go
do?
A year.
Yeah.
Right.
And the next
turned
thing I know.
Two,
and just the amazing guests we've had and just the interesting topics and just really proud of
and
us.
And over a million listeners. Woohoo.
It's
That's
incredible.
I can't believe.
Yeah.
Do you remember the radio station that said, oh, you and our seven listeners? I think it was Kiss FM or something like that. It was hysterical.
Yeah.
Like, of course, they had hundreds
exactly.
of millions of listeners.
Yeah.
But we actually officially went over a million. So cool. And then, of course, Christopher showed
that was
up today
so
with
sweet.
A bottle of Brewer's champagne for us to toast to.
This is candy. This is liquid candy. Like, I've never tasted anything so good in my life. And I probably had champagne maybe like 3 times in my life, but still, it's really good.
So thank you, Christopher.
Yeah.
Very sweet. He's been a very big supporter
Absolutely.
Of our show.
He really is. He's one of our seven listeners.
He is.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. All right. So any updates?
So I went on a cruise for Thanksgiving.
That's right. How was it?
You're going to die.
Nobody went overboard.
No one went overboard,
Close.
But I thought about it considering the first night we're at dinner and Remy's like, and I'm like, no.
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 Food poisoning?
I don't know what the hell it was, but David was on it. I'm like, Dave, take him back to the room. So he takes him back to the room and like I check in on him a couple hours later and he's okay. He's not great, but, and then like a couple hours later, I check back in and he's like, Mom.
Oh no.
Five times.
Oh.
But who's counting? Five barfs.
Well, you are because you're obsessed with, like,
I mean, I didn't know what to do. Thank God. Yes.
Barf.
Thank God for the cleanup crew. Like, they were amazing because, like, they didn't even bat an eyelash. It was like, oh, another one threw up. You know what I mean?
Oh.
I guess they get. So I don't
so
know.
Was he maybe seasick. A
I
bit.
Don't know.
You
I was
had
just
already
trying to,
launched.
I don't. You know, that's what's weird. He started to feel a little off before we even launched. So
oh.
I don't know. So it's hard to say, but I'm sure. I mean, it was rocking. Like, so
yeah.
I'm sure it didn't help. But aside from that, it was really fun.
It was. So we kind of got over that. He was better after
yes,
a day or
thank
so.
God.
Yay. Did you give him any like Dramamine or anything like that?
You know,
that?
We did the next day and it seemed to help. So.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
You know, the last cruise I went on, I got influenza A.
That was insane. And
yeah.
you had to be like.
Quarantined for
that's
2 days.
That's insane.
And poor Christopher too, with me.
That
yes.
was.
And
wait, were
in
you
with
vomiting?
The big masks. Yeah. Yeah. Everything. All ends.
Jesus
they
Christ.
Came in with these big like. What kind of suits are they called?
Hazmat.
Hazmat suits.
Shut up.
You know, cleaning the room and all that. I'm like, this is just not right. But
wait, they came in to clean the room in hazmat suits?
Yes.
Like you had Ebola?
Yes.
Jesus.
Probably worse because I don't think you can catch Ebola from somebody.
Right.
You'd have to eat the same food.
Oh my God, you
oh,
poor thing.
Crazy. But you had a good time. It's awesome.
How did you deal with that? Because the motion itself, I mean.
I don't even know how. I think I was literally delirious. 103, 104 fever.
Oh my God.
The hospital there gave me some medications,
yeah.
which helped. I literally took so many Advil to drop my fever down so that they let me off the ship after the second day because I had to have a regular fever, regular temperature.
Oh my God, you poor thing.
So,
you needed
yeah,
it.
Basically deliriously walking through Alaska and all the ports, but it was amazing. Anyway.
So how was your Thanksgiving?
Friendsgiving we did. It was lovely.
Aww.
Yeah. We helped out some friends who had their family members and
uh-huh.
had to evacuate. So it was just really nice. It was really nice to
That's
sort
great.
Of commiserate about, you know, how scary the fires were and just
yeah.
all support each other and play games. And it was awesome.
That's nice. Which game?
Yeah. I can't remember the name of it. It's that one where...
Cards Against Humanity?
Yes.
The best.
Yes.
The best game on the planet.
It's so funny that you just picked that one
because
out. Because
right
it's out
my of a... favorite.
Sure.
I'm obsessed with that game.
Like, well, we all had a rule that if we found a card or an answer to be particularly offensive, we could just throw it in the offensive pile. Because
there is nothing offensive about anything.
Oh, there was. There was one that actually happened on that Tahoe trip, remember, with the kids? And something came up about Nazis in Auschwitz.
Oh.
And that freaked me out that someone thought that was funny.
Wait, there was an actual card that said that.
The answer, Auschwitz.
Interesting. Yes. I didn't realize that.
Yes, so I was saying, you know, if there's going to be something that just
that's
home,
right, then that I understand. That's smart. Yeah. So you get like
a
free...
So everybody just got, you know, like, oh, no, that's not happening.
You know, there was like a contest for people to create new cards. And I was like, I would love to get that job. Like just to create like funny, you know, sayings.
Oh, my goodness. All right.
Anyway.
On with the show. Oh, and by the way, for everybody listening, we are going to find a way to archive all these shows in other formats. So they will be around for, I don't know if perpetuity is the right word, but at least for a while. So you can always take a listen.
And if you wanted a particular show, you can always email us because the email address will stay. And it's...
Right.
What is our email address? docandtherapist@gmail.com. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's check in about last week. Super articulate and bright guy, Bryant George, who is a doctor of neurological surgery. And he talked about the Morph device, which was this gadget to end painful detox from opiates. And he was great. So,
it was fantastic. Yeah, it was like so informative and so helpful to our field. I mean, I want to just like encourage all the rehab places that I've worked with and know to
look into it. Yeah. I mean, it's really, I didn't even know that was possible.
I didn't either. How innovative. It could really literally change the field of recovery completely.
100%.
Yeah.
So if you missed that show and you want to learn about kind of other ways to detox without it being so incredibly painful, look up the Morph device.
Okay. Today, we have Cindy Goldman Stolberg, a psychologist who has counseled individuals, couples, groups, and families for more than 40 years. She is co-author of Feeling Better and co-director of the Institute for Interpersonal Psychotherapy with Ronald J. I think it's Frey?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Cindy lives in Toronto, Ontario, and you can visit her online at interpersonalpsychotherapy.com. And we're here today with her to speak about her new book, Feeling Better, Beat Depression, and Improve Your Relationships with Interpersonal Psychotherapy. Welcome.
Thank you. And thank you very much for having me. I'm kind of excited I got on your last show.
I know.
So I wish you both really well.
I know. Well, you know what?
It's exciting.
It really is. And I was thinking last night that it just kind of flowed perfectly because there is kind of this sadness around it being the last show. And I love that your book is about, you know, feeling better and like different strategies, how to beat depression. So I think it meshed really well.
Absolutely. And even in terms of transitions, that's one of the areas we talk about in our group. So anytime anyone's going through a transition, we can use IPT right today and deal with all of this. So
it's great.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk with you both and to your listeners. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And we definitely want to get into interpersonal psychotherapy. What exactly is that? But first, let's just do a broad overview for our listeners about, you know, what constitutes depression, you know, because it is different than just having a day of sadness. And I'm not sure if in your book you're really talking about clinical depression or that feeling of I'm kind of down, more like dysthymia. Can you say a little bit about that?
Absolutely. And I think it really, interpersonal psychotherapy can be beneficial for both. So initially, it was created to treat clinical depression and the difference between clinical depression and, you know, down days, feeling, you know, kind of difficult or blue, as you both probably know, is mostly about intensity and the length that you feel that way. So there certainly are criteria that, you know, doctors or mental health clinicians use to say you have clinical depression. And it's very common. I mean, for adults in the United States, it's like 6.7%. Those are the kind of common figures from the NIMH studies. You know, that's almost 16.2 million adults who might suffer from an episode of depression. But what you talked about with dysthymia, it's kind of a form of depression where it's more chronic, or postpartum depression, which people suffer if they've had a baby, or, you know, in terms of having depression and other issues. But you don't have to have depression to benefit from interpersonal psychotherapy or IPT. So I think it can work for people who are struggling clinically, and those who are feeling really kind of down and stressed, you know, basically because of their relationships.
So you're saying basically it can help people who are depressed, like clinically depressed, but also people who maybe just have the blues.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So there are benefits to this fundamental model because it's based on primarily saying if you have good, meaningful, constructive relationships, you're going to feel better. And if you're struggling with any kind of mood difficulties and you have good, meaningful, constructive relationships, you're going to feel better more quickly. So, you know, we all, you know, experience conflicts or concerns with other people. We all go through periods where we're feeling particularly stressed and distressed, you know, in relation to others. And so there are lots of tips and lots of strategies for how you can help yourself feel better in those situations.
I love it. And I love that you use the metaphor of a broken leg, because I think so many people with depression have shame. They suffer. They don't see it as a real thing, that other people don't see it as a real thing, that they're just, you know, they're just complaining, or they're just, you know, they're not doing their best to get themselves out of it. And I know
absolutely
the history of having had a couple of rounds of clinical depression.
It's very hard. And I think, you know, if we thought about mental health like physical health, you know, it might be easier for us to accept that. And you're 100% right. You know, there's a lot of stigma still involved. And I think sometimes people will say to someone who says, I'm depressed or I'm really feeling crappy, well, you know, snap out of it. Or, you know, you have no reason to feel that way. And very few people, nobody chooses to feel bad. Nobody wants to feel like that, right?
Right.
And so I think some people suffer in silence. So when we say that, we say it's a treatable illness. It's like having epilepsy, or it's like having a broken leg. And, you know, if you have a broken leg, you're not going to go dancing. You know, you say, sorry, I can't go. And no one's going to give you a hard time, right? But if you're depressed and you say, I really can't go to as many functions as I usually do, I'm sorry that I can't do this, I think people need to understand that you're trying to work on feeling better, and that you're not, you know, you're not saying that because you're not trying hard enough. I think that's an important thing, like you say, to think of it more like a broken leg.
So can you just give us kind of a broad overview? I imagine the listeners out here want to know, what exactly is IPT and how would you describe it?
Well, I think IPT, as I say, initially was a model. It's an evidence-based model. It's research-proven. It lasts usually from 8 to 12 weeks. It's time-limited. You start, you do the work, and you finish, and you feel better at the end. It was developed by Drs. Klerman and Wiseman in the 60s, and it's just been kind of the best-kept secret in psychology for a long time. It's also very highly recommended by, you know, American Psychological Associations, psychiatry associations, and it's a very structured, collaborative approach where you begin to work on identifying the people in your interpersonal network, which are, who do you relate to? Who do you connect to? What are the quality of your relationships? We really go step by step at educating the client as to what mood difficulties are. Then we go into identifying who the people and what the relationships are like in your world, in your network. And then we pick a focal area, which is common. It's often really common for people who are struggling with mood difficulties to experience either conflict with other people. Maybe they're going through a transition, like you guys talked about at your last show. You know, you want to talk about how you feel about it. You know, unresolved bereavement or feelings of loneliness and isolation. So you choose one of those areas, you create a goal, and then you work on accomplishing how you can manage to achieve your goal and feel better. And so it's step by step. We really do break it down in the book into very, very manageable, concrete steps that anyone can do to help themselves address how they're feeling and what's going on for them. Hmm. That's kind of the overview of IPT.
I love that. I just to comment a little bit about the format of your book, which is really cute, that within each chapter you have little sidebars that say pep talk and try this. So it makes it really simple.
Right.
It's cute. Really cute.
So, okay. So I imagine.
Yeah. And also kind of it reminds people, what to do, right?
Right.
You know, kind of helps them out.
Sure. So I imagine people have heard a lot about CBT or DBT. And for those of you who don't know, that's cognitive behavioral therapy or dialectical behavioral therapy. So what differentiates IPT, or why would you recommend that over other forms of therapy?
Well, I think, you know, you're right about the CBT and DBT being very kind of popular and what people know. I think what the difference is that with IPT, we really focus, as I say, on the relationship. So it's not the, you know, incorrect feelings in your head. It's not the irrational thinking. It's basically being able to enrich the relationships you have so that you feel your mood improves. And there isn't homework. There isn't written homework. I think, you know, probably in cognitive behavioral, oftentimes people will complete thought records, right?
Right.
And sometimes people do feel some blame for, well, I shouldn't have these thoughts, or I'm being inflexible. So we're not trying to blame anybody or say what's right or wrong. So I think it's very much here and now. And for some people, CBT works. If you happen to be, you know, more of a thinker, or your personality is more list-oriented, or you're dealing with more anxiety, then that can be more, you know, can be appropriate for you. But in terms of, not everybody benefits from CBT. And certainly when I learned IPT many, many years ago, I had the choice of learning CBT or IPT. And I liked just the idea of relationships, because I think relationships are extremely important to our well-being and to us. You know, everything, the most important things in my life are the relationships with my family and my friends and my colleagues, and they mean a tremendous amount to me. So that's why I really feel IPT is so valuable and has a different approach.
I love
very
that.
Present oriented. We work also on one problem at a time. You know how people sometimes feel overwhelmed that they have a number of different things that are bugging them, you know, maybe their partner, maybe a work issue, it could be their kids. But we deal with one thing at a time. And you deal with one issue, you know what you did to make yourself feel better, and then you really apply those skills and those strategies to the next problem and the next problem that comes up. So you feel like you really are able to accomplish something, rather than, you know, being scattered and trying to deal with everything at one time.
So it's like you're prepping with building blocks and foundations that you can actually use for the next problem. So it's sort of a connection.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we also know, you know, that the depression can be a recurring illness. So we certainly talk about, how do I kind of become prepared? When are the times that I might become more stressed? You know how holidays are, right? Even though it's supposed to be great and happy, there's, you know, everybody has expectations and everybody is, you know, being pulled in different directions. So we help people really prepare as well, once they've had good experiences, work through a problem before we finish. Usually in those 12 weeks or so, we'll say, let's plan for when things are going to start to get stressful again. And let's create a plan that you will use so you know how to handle it, right? Even whether it's holiday time, or with adolescents, you know, when it's exam time, or if you're making a transition, if you're going off to college or university, if you've had a job loss. These are things that we really help people identify and be prepared, so they know what they can do when they're struggling.
And so you mentioned that it's largely present-centered, but I am curious for, let's say, people who have post-traumatic stress disorder originating from early developmental childhood abuse or neglect, et cetera, and then they have end up with, you know, a biochemical depression on top of that. Do you still address the earlier childhood connections and relationships and how that affects their choosing of relationships in the present?
Well, really only in how it currently impacts them. So I would say, you know, when you talk about PTSD, I think that's been a really exciting piece in the IPT world that John Markowitz, who's a colleague, has started to do research on using IPT with post-traumatic stress. And what happens with that, what's so valuable about this, is that you don't have to use re-exposure. So it's really the first kind of model that doesn't, you know, you have the individual having to relive whatever the trauma was. So what we do is we really articulate what's happening currently. let's say something reminds you of a situation that occurred. Well, the important part is who can help you now? Who do you have there? How can you communicate with them what you're experiencing? How can you work with other people who are also experiencing those kind of similar problems? What do they do to help themselves feel better so you don't feel so alone and you get to glean ideas from the other people who are experiencing what you've experienced and you're also not feeling so isolated? So that's one way of bringing whatever the trauma or whatever the earlier situations were really into the current kind of situation for you and not having to go too far back, right?
Right.
One of the young women I was working with, she'd kind of drive up to her apartment and she was sharing it with two other roommates and she'd get angry every day, right? And she'd go in and they'd argue about who didn't do what in the apartment. And when I asked her, when else have you felt that way? She said, I used to feel that way when I walked in my door at home. Because my father would be sitting in the kitchen and he would start to criticize me as soon as I walked in the door. Mm-hmm. So the question was for her, you can see where that's coming from, but what can you say and do with your roommates now that will help you manage whatever your conflicts are currently? Mm-hmm. So that's where the here and now really gets kind of worked on. And even as you said, if you're picking relationships based on some of your past experiences, we really encourage people to say, maybe it can be different for you now. You know, maybe when, you know, you can have a relationship where the person isn't criticizing you all the time, like everyone else has, or isn't trying to control what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So that's how we bring the past really into the current present situation. So, and I think that could be helpful. I'm wondering what you guys think of that as a way to work.
I like it a lot. Yeah,
me too.
It's very concrete. It gives a lot more hope, I think. And it's interesting because I'm heavily trained in, do a lot of EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization reprocessing with trauma. Mm-hmm. And I do have a great deal of success with it, but there is that component of a lot of people won't be interested in it because of that re-exposure in their minds of having to pair that negative cognition with the event, and re-describing the event does re-trigger all of those unhappy feelings. So I like this. I'm going to definitely read more about this and incorporate much more into my practice.
Come and train with us. And also, like I say, there's a good book. There's some great information. As I say, John Markowitz wrote a book about IPT and PTSD. So I think it can be, you're 100% right. There's for some people, you don't want to have to be re-exposed, but you want to find a different way to be. But if you're with someone who you've been able to talk to and who's gone through something similar that you have, or even if they haven't, right, that they're there for you and they say, what can I do to help you? And you work together, then obviously that's going to make things a lot easier when you happen to be in situations that are making you feel reminded of whatever trauma you're experiencing. You're having a different experience now because you're there with someone who cares about you, who's providing comfort, and that makes a huge difference when you're not alone with dealing with these kinds of things.
And would you recommend IPT for somebody who has social anxiety or who doesn't have relationships typically and is more of a loner?
Well, I think that's another area that we do focus on. And some of the anxiety, the important part is to be able to understand what's been keeping that person from developing friendships and sustaining them. So we really do then look at it from that perspective. If someone's, you know, when we do our inventory and there's very little, you know, someone says, I don't really have any friends and I don't see my family. You know, they may see their professional, they may go to their doctor every week, or they may, you know, talk to the person at the where they get their coffee. But we really, the goal is to just help them engage with other people. And step by step, we get them to look at what they're doing or what they're not doing that has contributed to the fact that they aren't making those connections and having those relationships, right? So, you know, even in the book, there's an example. We have some kind of case examples, and they're drawn from a variety of people we've worked with and our own experiences. Let's say someone's expectations are unrealistic, and they're angry all the time. And they expect everybody else to, you know, do things the way they want them done, always at the time they want them done and the way they want them done. It's not easy to have good friendships, right? When you're the kind of person who's angry and bitter and just being, you know, kind of self-focused all the time. So we approach the person who's that way and we're saying, how's this working for you? You know, we want them to ask themselves, if it's not working, then are you open and willing to trying something different? Are you open and willing to ask the other person what they would like to do, right? Are you open and willing to take a look at what you're doing and can I do it differently? So, you know, in the book, there's a lot of questions that really help the reader and individuals examine their own style and how that style is impacting on whether they're getting what they want in life, right? So I think that's, we absolutely feel that if people are willing to look at those things, there are opportunities for them to learn how to develop friendships and how to sustain those friendships.
It's always such a valuable question you brought up when you ask somebody, you know, is that working for you? Or what is the result you're after? And are you getting that? Because so many times I think people are told that what they're doing isn't working and they don't come to that conclusion themselves. But when they really get that aha bulb moment, if you will, it's so much more motivating than to say, oh, well, I guess I probably need to do something else.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's kind of what we say to people. This is what I like. I feel this is a very structured but collaborative. It's not my decision. And you're right, I'm not going to tell people what to do. IPT says, here's your choice. Look at what's going on. How's, like I said, I love that line. How's that working for you? You know, if it's not working, well, you have a choice. You can continue to do exactly what you're doing, or we can offer some other alternatives. Mm-hmm. And I say to people too, I think I said this to someone yesterday. I said, you know, you can try something new. You can go back to your old ways if you like, because you've got that down pat, right? You know how to be mad all the time.
Right.
But if you want to explore what else you're feeling too, and you probably, you know, might see this as well, it's easier to be angry than it is to say to someone, you know, I'm feeling sad, or I'm feeling inadequate, or I'm feeling frustrated, right?
Exactly.
And so I think what we do too in trying to help people identify what else are you feeling, you know, because you can get mad at people and you may have every good reason to be mad. But if I say to my husband, oh, you know, you're being such a jerk, well, that's not going to get me very far, right? You know, but if I say to him, you know, it really bothers me when you, you know, don't talk to me when we're in the car and going on a long road trip, there's room for discussion, right? It's not like I'm, you know, it's not like I'm shutting things down. It's not like I'm really, you know, you know, if I said, well, you're being a jerk, he would just say, well, so are you. That doesn't work for us. There are ways that you can approach people that will really both get what you want a lot better.
Yeah, and it's also, I think, important to recognize that some things that people do that we may think are dysfunctional or don't work actually do have a positive impact for them to some degree. But then it's also opening the door to look at, well, what are the other components of that? Almost like a cost-benefit analysis. Okay, so you get those good things out of it, but what are you actually losing from doing that?
Right. And I had a situation like that with a client many, many years ago, and I think that happens sometimes when people get stuck. So she was very angry at an ex-husband who she had divorced 15 years ago. Well, still being angry after that many years was not working or helping her, right? But she wasn't necessarily willing to change. But, you know, when you said, what are you getting out of it? The point was saying, what would be bad if you stopped being angry? What would you lose from that? Mm-hmm. And she said, it would mean I would have forgiven him. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think we ever would have gotten to realize that she had combined anger and forgiveness in the same package. Mm-hmm. And when we said, you know, when I said, well, no, I think those things can be separate. You can stop being angry, but you don't have to forgive him. He treated you badly. You were really left very, you know, impoverished in many ways. It was a terrible situation. But the anger isn't serving you or anybody around you anymore. And she made a huge shift and a huge change when, as you said, we looked at what are you getting out of it. We're able to break it down into smaller pieces, and we were able to, you know, find what she needed to keep, which was, okay, don't forgive them, but the anger isn't helping you, right? So it was a really rewarding time. And I remember her children came in at the end of therapy, and they said to me, what did you do for our mother? We haven't seen her be not angry for 15 years. It was a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to see someone feel better and do better after such a long time.
Anger, I think, is a very empowering feeling. You know, people feel empowered when they're angry. So I think that's part of it. And so once they let that go, it's like, oh, but I'm feeling vulnerable and it's scary. And yeah, but that's amazing.
But in reality, it's really not empowering because you can't actually move forward in your life in any way. In that whole saying and program, anger is like swallowing poison and waiting for the other guy to die. I mean, unless you're in that immediately dangerous situation.
I haven't heard that one before.
Oh, you haven't? Yeah, I love it. Resentment is like swallowing poison. And because, you know, the body suffers being in an angry state when the danger is no longer present.
Right.
But I agree that definitely it can have that illusion of empowerment,
that's what I mean.
Right? But it doesn't actually make our lives better. So that, you know, it's always amazing. And I also want to comment that I think for many people, a lot of other things are connected to their holding on to their anger. Like you mentioned, this woman that she attached forgiveness to that, and she wasn't ready to do that. So therefore, she wasn't ready to give up her anger. I think that's just such an important pyramid to work with clients to find out what are those underlying attachments they have to letting go of an emotion because they fear something else will occur.
Right. And it could be protective. You know, anger protects you from something, you're right, whether it's being vulnerable. But unless we do that, when you begin to open up to other people, like you said, the cost benefit, the benefit is people often open up to us. So if I say to someone, you know, you are, you know, I'm feeling sad or distressed, then, and they say, you know, I've felt that way too at times. So it really does make a huge difference in terms of being able to connect with other people and share feelings that then bring you closer to them as well, right? You feel once somebody shared something with you and you've shared something with them, you have that knowledge of each other. You have that connection that you didn't necessarily have before.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So we've been talking with Cindy Goodman Stuhlberg. Did I say that right? Stuhlberg? I just want to make sure I'm pronouncing it right.
Stuhlberg, okay. Cindy Goodman Stuhlberg,
And she's the author of Feeling Better. And yeah, this is really interesting. So you talk about in the book a SMART goal. So can you explain a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, I think a SMART goal is something that people use in all different models, right? So it basically means specific and measurable and achievable and relevant and timely. Those are the kind of what it stands for, the acronym. But it, I think the more concrete a goal can be, then you can work towards accomplishing it. So let's say I say, you know, I want to be the best, you know, the best mother I can be, or I never want to yell at my children again, which is pretty unrealistic, I think. But instead, if you say, I want to argue less with my children and about how much screen time they have every day, or I want to talk to my children about homework expectations, then those are goals that are very concrete, and you know when you've achieved it. And you know what you're working on as well. So that's a lot better than saying, oh, I never want to yell at my kids again, because I'm really not sure that's going to be happen.
Sure.
It might not for me.
Me neither.
But and then we all, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said me neither. Right. It's not achievable for me either.
Yeah, right. That's good. I'm glad I'm not alone. Yeah. But my children are old now, so it's okay. But in terms of the other thing we ask about goals is we talk to people about saying, what would be the best outcome that could happen? What's the worst outcome that could happen? So I could say, well, if I said, I don't want to, you know, let's say I said, I want to argue less. And I say, well, I'll never argue again. My kids will just listen to me every time. Well, that's the best. And the worst is that we start arguing lots more than we do right now. And realistically, well, we probably argue a little bit less. We have a productive discussion. And most of the time, they stick to what we've agreed on. Now, that to me is a really realistic goal that you can work with someone on, and you can say, you know what, I bet you can accomplish that. And I think people feel much better when they're working towards something that they know they can accomplish, rather than being disappointed if they don't, reach the sun, the moon, and the stars, mm-hmm. right? So I think that's an important aspect that we identify when we ask people to anticipate what they're going to be able to accomplish.
I was just going to say, so you said this was an 8 to 12 week process. What if somebody says, hey, look, I have, five sessions. Is this the type of thing where you could do kind of like a rapid fire in five sessions, or is it really recommended to do the 8 to 12 weeks?
Well, you can. I think it depends on the nature of the problem, and it depends certainly also on the motivation level of the individual. So it's interesting because there have been so many adaptations of the original IPT model, and there's something called IPT brief, and it's like -B. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure exactly how many sessions. I think it may be even, something closer to, 4 to 6 or something like that. And there are modifications. So, yes, you can do it for less. Mm-hmm. In terms of sometimes people will do more than 12 sessions. If you're working with groups and providing IPT in a group modality, sometimes you'll have, longer sessions. It's important, though, to have a time limit, because I think that element really encourages people to actually do something. If it's open-ended and you can talk and discuss forever, I mean, that can be appropriate in certain circumstances. But I do feel that one of the fundamental powers and one of the best components of this model is that it is time limited and encourages people to actually try something different. Mm-hmm. So it's been adapted to brief form. It's been adapted for eating disorders. It's been adapted for postpartum depression. It's been adapted to work with adolescents and older adults. It's been adapted for individuals and group settings and families and couples. So the model itself is quite wide ranging and it really is practiced all over the world. There's IPT going on almost everywhere.
I love it. It's so practical with so many great mm-hmm. tools to use. I wanted to ask you a question in terms of, well, first I'll make a statement. I know that a lot of people are, resistant or hesitant about trying medication. A lot of the studies in psychotherapy suggest that there's a greater positive outcome when medication is prescribed with psychotherapy simultaneously, that medication alone or psychotherapy alone with depression is generally less effective. It sounds like, though, in your model, I don't know if there's value in also somebody who uses medication, or is the model against trying medication?
No, absolutely not. I think there's room for both. So mm-hmm. I think, certainly some of the research does show that medication and therapy can be very effective and helpful. So there's no reason whatsoever that you can't use it with medication or without medication. And I think that's really an individual choice of the person who's using the medication and trying different things. I think what happens is oftentimes, you probably see this yourself, medication may address some of the vegetative signs, which is what we mean by sleep difficulties or concentration or, if your appetite. But you may feel better, you may feel like eating, you may sleep better, but you still might be fighting with your mother-in-law, right? Or you still might be having difficulty with your children, or you still might be experiencing conflict with colleagues at work. So not only do you need to address those physical symptoms, but this model really addresses the things that are still going on in your life, like the divorce or like the birth of a child or the unresolved bereavement. So I think that's, it's an important thing to remember that your symptoms, some of your symptoms may be better, but you're still going to struggle, how are you going to handle the problems in the relationships that you're dealing with on a daily basis?
Right. One of the things that I usually say to clients to help them understand, you know, what medication really does, it's sort of like you're sitting in a dark room with depression, and medication helps you open the blinds so you can actually see what the weather's like inside. It's not going to change the weather.
Right, exactly.
So you still have to deal with what's out there, you know, but now you know you should take a sweater or you take an umbrella or something, and then you're going to be better equipped on how to deal with that.
Yeah, for sure. Or it's like climbing up a mountain with a knapsack of rocks on your back. You can take the rocks out, but you're still climbing, right?
Yeah, so exactly.
You want to know if you can develop strategies for communicating more effectively. You want to be able to make decisions. You want to know how to approach another person and talk to them about your expectations and what you need or what you want, and to ask them what their expectations are also. So that's why I think there's so much value in the model and in reading about it, because it gives you the skills and the tools to really handle situations better.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I also think it's important for clients who do, or for people who are interested in learning more about medication, if they were undertaking these other kinds of psychotherapies, particularly interpersonal psychotherapies, to make sure you get a psychiatrist who doesn't over-medicate, who really does listen to you. Because I think one of the downsides of people, why they are so resistant, is they see some people go on medication and they're zombies.
Yes.
You know, they're not functional. They don't have their feelings. And that is not, by the way, the purpose of medication, at least from our point of view as psychotherapists. It's a facilitator.
And I think there are people who are reluctant. Some people don't want to put their adolescent on medication.
Sure.
Some people who are like pregnant or nursing don't want to take meds. So there are benefits and there are negatives. Or someone, let's say, is on already a number of different medications for other illnesses. So I think what's good is that you can do both. You can use meds or not use meds. And to get a proper consultation, and also someone who will monitor it. Right, who will keep an eye on what you're using, how it's working, if it's not working, what you can do differently. So, we're really to have professionals who know what they're doing to talk to about it.
And so, are you able to just give us maybe a couple of the tools outlined in the book, or just something to kind of, I don't know, give us a little carrot so we can learn a little bit about
it? Absolutely, absolutely. I think one of the great things is in terms of expectations. So there's my colleague Ron Frey, who I wrote the book with, and we've been working together for many years. He developed this wonderful tool, you know, called the Matrix. And if you're having a dispute with someone or a conflict, I think what's great about it is that you begin to discuss your difficulties or your differences without fighting about it. So the Matrix really allows each person to identify what they expect of themselves, what they expect of the other person, what they think they expect of the other person, and what they think that other person expects of them. So each person does this separately. So we really outline this and take the reader step by step through the matrix so that you'd be very surprised. I may know what I think I should be doing in relation to my partner, but you'd be very surprised how I might say, well, I think he should be doing this. And he says, well, of course not. I didn't expect you to do that. So that's one of the great tools that we help individuals kind of identify. Mm-hmm. What are your expectations? And then your choices are to look together at what you expect of each other and yourself, and then to negotiate, to come to agreements, to see if you can work together and come up with mutually agreeable expectations. And you do it one kind of issue at a time. If it's a partner you're living with and it's about how do we raise the children, you know, what religion do we practice? How often do we visit the in-laws? How do we deal with finances? These are like, it's a format so that you can work together to find out if you're both on the same page and to resolve issues without having to fight and argue and yell at each other about it. So that's one kind of tool and technique. And then look at, some people find out they're so far apart that it's not going to work for them. I mean, we try really hard to help people, you know, deal with their, you know, their problems and try to make things better. But one of the options always is if the other person isn't going to change, or you're not going to change, or both of you aren't going to change.
Yeah.
There's two ways to go. You can either let the problem bother you less and meet your needs somewhere else, or you sometimes have to dissolve the relationship, right? So we're not saying that doesn't happen, but the tools we offer doing the matrix are really to identify what can work and if it's not going to work. So that's, you know, that's one tool that I love the way Ron did it, primarily because he couldn't keep straight all the issues that people right. were talking about. But it came out with this great matrix that I love, that I always, you know, we always practice and do when we're in training.
I love it. So believe it or not, though, we are out of time. We just went by so fast.
Oh.
So we got one solid tool
exactly,
there.
Exactly, yes.
Lots of wonderful information. And so you have been a fantastic guest. Thank you so much. And I am definitely going to dive into this book from cover to cover. Can you tell your listeners where they can find you and what to expect in the future?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. And really the best way to reach us, which I think is the easiest, is look up feelingbetterthebook.com. So if you look feelingbetterthebook.com, they don't have to remember my last name or how to spell it.
Right, exactly.
And they can order the book. It's available through Barnes & Noble. It's available through Amazon. And I really appreciate both of you inviting me to speak today. And I wish you the best of luck in all your future endeavors. So
thank you
very, very much for the time
and
your insight.
So again, we've been talking with Cindy Stolberg and the author of Feeling Better. Thank you so much. It was really great.
Wow. Okay. So we've done it.
I know. It's crazy.
I wanted to ask you a question.
Anything.
I just thinking, so now we'll have some free time.
Yeah.
Time freed up, right? Because we don't just show up. We actually do a fair amount of work.
Exactly.
For the show, organizing guests and schedules and calendars.
Outlines
and
communications.
Reaching out and communications and looking for sponsors. And every bit of it has been wonderful and worth it. What do you think you're going to use this extra time for?
Oh my God, it's so funny. I was thinking that today. You know, my private practice has been building. So
good.
I'll probably create some more time for that, to be honest. I think I was a little overloaded. So I'm kind of looking forward to sort of balancing my time more evenly, probably. But that's probably where it's going to go. What about you?
Well, I'm going to dive more into this real estate investing knowledge and, you know, seeing where that can go, just sort of as my sideline hobby, and hopefully be a good money maker. Who knows? I have some other book ideas that
I'm
considering, maybe just really going the self-publishing route.
That would be amazing.
I know we won't have this show platform to,
to
say that, but I'm sure other people will have me on their shows. And
yes.
So I'm thinking of a couple of things, just almost like pocketbooks as opposed to full feature.
I love it.
Like 50-page downloadable things that, you know, really practical advice in some different areas that I was looking up that haven't been written about. So
you'd be
I will
so
not
good.
Say the actual topic.
Exactly.
So I'm looking forward to that, and maybe, you know, having lunch with a friend now and again. You know,
exactly.
It's so hard to find that time.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree. And we'll continue with our.
We're going to make a commitment to
once a month.
Right.
Done.
At least a lunch or something.
Exactly. Oh, I love you. Thank you for being a great partner.
Regular thing. And most of all, I want to just reach out to our listeners. Your support has been invaluable. We appreciate you so much. Hope that you have gleaned interesting, useful, helpful information along the way. We would so welcome any of your thoughts, your words for us, feedback at our email, which will still be up and running, which is docandtherapist@gmail.com. DOC and sadly, the rapist at gmail.com. I never put that together until we were doing our website.
Yes.
And we'll have our website still, and we're still going to have our social media. We won't be posting too much on our Facebook, but now and again, you never know.
It's true.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much.
From you?
Kelly? I mean, God, you said it all, but yeah, I mean, the same with me. I'm just in such gratitude for, number one, for you and our partnership. I feel like we worked so well together. I'm so grateful for all of our listeners and people who were so supportive to me on this journey. And, you know, people who liked our posts and were like, oh, this looks great. And that meant so much to me.
Right.
And
followers.
So, exactly.
Yeah, it's been really cool. Really, really, really fun. So again, we hope you have learned some good things and you know that you'll continue to, you know, if you miss some shows along the way, go back and try to find them.
Exactly.
We have a whole library now. We have over 200 shows.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. Oh, I love you, Kelly.
Love you too.
I love you all, listeners. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.